empty lot on 3rd Street to stay empty for now, and Haines' fishery managers finish analyzing the salmon season. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Barrett Wilbur. Those stories and more up next. The question of what to do with an empty lot in downtown Haines went back to the Planning Commission last week, but the group didn't change its opinion on the property. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
The lot at the corner of 3rd and Main Street used to be the site of the Haines Middle School. Now the grassy space in between the Haines Brewing Company and the Borough Administration Building is mostly empty. Last year, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee proposed turning the spot into a park. The Planning Commission did not want to designate it as such, but also didn't classify the lot as eligible for sale. Last month, the Parks Committee brought the lot up again, asking the Assembly to designate it as a recreation area for public use. The Assembly sent the request to the Planning Commission. At a meeting last week, Donnie Turner pointed out that it wasn't long ago that the group discussed the lot.
That lot, we want to leave it alone. It not designated a park, not designated for sale, but just to leave that piece of property alone. And if somebody comes along with a great use for that piece of property, that we can put it up for sale if somebody wants to.
The conversation goes back to 2012. Commission Chair Rob Goldberg said that's when the group voted to retain the lot for at least 10 years. Jeremy Stevens said even though the commission is in the same position it was the last time the lot was on the table, it's good the Assembly sent it back to the Planning Commission. Stevens also said if the Parks Committee wants to move in a certain direction with the property, they need a more developed plan.
I think that if they really did want it to proceed with this method, they're going to have to put a lot more work into it and dig up some funding because the borough's in the red.
The Planning Commission did not change its stance on the property. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
While the boats have long been tied up in the harbor, Haines' fishery managers are just finishing this year's analysis of what Lynn Cannell's salmon were up to. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur looks at takeaways from this year's fishing season. Haines' staple salmon, sockeye, had a bad year, but it wasn't so bad for Haines fishermen, thanks to chums.
We had low returns to the Chilkoot system of sockeye, low harvests of sockeye. We had excellent above average harvest of chum, which rounded out the year for everybody. And that made it so everyone could make their boat payments, which is the goal.
Wyatt Ray Fournier is one of Haines' salmon management biologists. It's his job to figure out what's going on with Lynn Cannell salmon in real time.
There's a lot of modelers that would love to tell you they could model the world. I'm more of a guy where I want to see it. I want to see what's going on.
This year, Ray Fournier's job was to find the balance between sockeye and chum, making sure fishermen weren't catching too many of the former while still hauling in plenty of the latter. But how to do that when the fish are milling around together at the bottom of the sea? Ray Fournier uses math like a painter would use colors. By layering up different measurements, he can create an overall picture of what salmon are up to.
You can try to predict as much as you want, but to me, it's those in-season observations of how many fish are coming into the lake, how many fish are getting caught, that allow you to make a good management decision.
He uses historical data to come up with a basic foundation. How many salmon usually come back? Then he adds two real-time in-season measurements, harvest and escapement data. Harvest, how many fish have already been caught? An escapement, how many fish are escaping fishermen to get upstream and spawn? Using harvest and escapement totals, he can make a good estimate of how many salmon are out there. Then he can figure out if too few fish are spawning or if fishermen are catching too many. Lynn Cannell is an especially complicated place to manage fish because it supports two separate stocks of sockeye. Fishermen catch both Chilcat Lake sockeye and Chilkoot Lake sockeye. They have to be accounted for independently. Of course, you can't tell the difference by looking at them. Fishermen rely on the biologists to make sure they're not catching too many of either, and Haines' managers have a unique solution to keep them separate.
And our port sampling team goes in and takes genetic tissue from those fish, and within, I think we basically have a little over a week turnaround, they can tell me the genetic composition of those stocks, so where they're going.
Fishermen depend on Ray Fournier and his team to make sure both stocks are protected, while still allowing them to make a profit.
So like this year, we had low returns to Chilkoot, So we pushed all our fishermen over towards the Chilkat side, and we closed that inlet going to Chilkoot. That way they could still catch sockeye, they just weren't catching fish that may be going to a low escapement.
But as Ray Fournier knows, dealing with low sockeye runs in season is different than knowing why they happen and working to prevent them. So what caused this year's low run? Rewind 5 seasons, Ray Fournier says. Sockeye, born in 2012, returned to spawn this summer, and that year, escapement numbers were actually too high.
We actually put too many fish in. If you put too many fish into a cold, silty lake, you start to get density dependence. You might have not enough room for all those little fish.
Density dependence means density-dependent mortality, when crowding and not enough food kills baby fish before they reach the ocean. Because sockeye runs were so low this year, it's unlikely they'd create a density of baby fish that would affect runs the same way in 2023. And this year, Haines fishermen got a lucky break, thanks to chum salmon. Juneau area hatchery DIPAC saw record returns for Lynn Canal chum, far beyond what was predicted.
One of the great things of being able to have a multi-species fishery is that if you have a year where the sockeye aren't returning, you may have a year where the chum are. By the end of the year, our fishermen were telling me they were pretty happy.
Ray Fournier can be happy too. By the end of the month, all his research will be presented to the public as Fish and Game works on a stock assessment over the winter. He has no more fish to count, at least until June. A new satellite will help predict Alaska's weather and warn of natural hazards much earlier and with better accuracy. KTOO's Matt Miller has the story from Juneau.
Called JPSS-1 as the first in the Joint Polar Satellite System, the next-generation satellite features instruments that can see through clouds, determine sea surface temperatures, detect rising river levels, and spot small fires before they become big ones. The satellite orbits pole to pole, unlike many weather satellites which appear to remain fixed above a certain point on the equator. Those geostationary satellites cannot see Alaska's North Slope or the Arctic Ocean at the North Pole very well. Polar orbiting satellites, however, they don't have that problem. Dr. Mitch Goldberg, program scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says the satellite has 5 instruments that are all extremely accurate.
So if the atmosphere has a temperature change of, let's say, just a tenth of a degree, which is important for being able to forecast weather, these instruments can sense that change.
One instrument is called a day-night band. Basically, it's a high-resolution camera that can pick up visible light at night and see things in the dark, like clouds, smoke, and fog. Nate Eckstein, science infusion and technology transfer meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Alaska, says such visible imagery is very important for a state with long winter nights.
Gives us great detail to see hazards for aviation, like fog and a mountain pass. Before the sun comes up, be able to get that into the forecast, warn the pilot.
Visual flight rules require pilots to be able to see where they're going, and they cannot fly through clouds.
This ability to detect small areas in tight places where our general aviation aircrafts are operating is really key.
Infrared imaging used by many current weather satellites cannot distinguish between snow and clouds. They both show up as white in an image. In addition, cloud cover in Alaska may obscure important marine or land details for days, even weeks at a time. Eckstein has an example of how the satellite's microwave instruments will be useful to the Bering Sea fishing fleet trying to avoid sea ice.
You know, traditionally, I know that sea ice analysts get lots of satellite imagery. It's one of their primary tools. You know, a lot of it would get discarded because there's stratus clouds covering the sea ice edge, and therefore they have to go back and use some older imagery to know where that's at. But with the microwave technology, we now have the capability to see through these clouds in a lot of cases and know where the ice edge is on a more consistent basis, which leads to a more accurate forecast.
A satellite can provide an earlier warning of developing storm systems in the western Pacific Ocean, increasing the accuracy of long-range forecasts. Edward Liske is a meteorologist and satellite imagery specialist at the National Weather Service office in Juneau, and he says the new satellite will also provide more information about Alaska at a higher resolution.
It's going to provide a lot more data for the numerical models to work with. So it'll hopefully make those numerical models perform a lot better and be able to bring forecast systems more accurately and more in advance than what we currently have.
Warnings about wildland fires, ice jam flooding, or heavy rainfall can also get to key decision makers sooner. JPSS-1 is a more robust version of NOAA's Tsunami Research Satellite that was pressed into operation after a successful demonstration 6 years ago. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
For KHNS News, I'm Barrett Wilbur. Thanks for joining us this evening.